Hello and welcome to another edition of the Coffcast podcast. We're coming to you after the Liverpool season has officially ended. Although we're still not guaranteed top four. I've got Beryl, I've got Jay, and look, Jay, okay, we were going to do something last night, but everybody was literally too furious. And it would have been like just incoherent middle-aged men shouting at each other, but it's that stings. We give them every incentive. It looked like for the first minute and a half, I thought, oh look, we're trying to slow the game down here and maybe take the sting out of the crowd, and then we just do what we usually do and give them their first chance inside like 3 minutes, and you know they should probably score. Doucouré, I think it is. And then we give them another chance and they think they have a penalty and they don't, and we get away with it twice. And like all season, we don't learn our lesson. And like recent games, and not all season, which is why we are where we are, we just fail to convert some real gilt-edged chances at real critical points of the game. And you know, with a team that's got a win away from home for the first time in God knows how long, coming into the game, knowing there's something to play for, we're a little bit vulnerable and we totally allow them to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I think, well, obviously given my location in the world, surrounded by a hell of a lot of Evertonians, and we're like going into the game last night, they would have the essence that it was a completely free hit, which it was. You know, they have nothing to lose. They're pretty much safe other than, you know, the mathematics of it, but it would have took a miracle from the team's belief them to catch them. And, you know, it was the carrot was dangled of the narrative. It was ending our title charge, you know, the very slim hopes that we had left of one. And you can imagine the team talk from Dyche was like, you know, this is a free hit, lads. Everyone thinks they're going to beat you, you know, even though we haven't been playing well. Go out there and prove everyone wrong and go and, you know, be proud to wear the Everton shirt. And literally they did. And they wanted it more. And that's an embarrassing thing to admit as a Liverpool fan going into work today. Was like, they wanted it more than they beat us in every single aspect of the game. And even down to the level of finishing, like you referenced, you know, we had chances. You know, there was good opportunities within the game for several of our players to get us back in the game in the first half, and then even, you know, moments in the second half to maybe even, you know, salvage a consolation. And we couldn't do that either. And it's a sad state of affairs that we're ending the Klopp era with a whimper, and, you know, 6-8 weeks or whatever, we were all talking about a potential quadruple, and it's literally going to end with a Carabao Cup and, you know, a piss poor end to the season where it's not what the fellow deserves. And, you know, it's kind of looking like he's emotionally and mentally checked out. And, you know, obviously he kind of admitted earlier on the season when he said he was going, that's what it was. He couldn't, you know, carry on, and it kind of looks as though it's stemming to the players now. And a lot of them look like they've emotionally and mentally checked out. And it's just a bit of a hard thing to discuss, in that we kind of want the season to just end now and get it over and done with, and sort of look to ventures new and fresh ideas and fresh outlooks. But we've got to endure the next four games, and we hope that we can do our best just to get through them in decent enough shape that, you know, we go away with something to cheer, and, you know, Klopp walks away with at least a smile on his face rather than the look of a shattered man who was slumped on the sidelines at Everton last night, which was not nice to see.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. Beryl, yeah, again, we massively underperform our XG. We have the chances, but we allow them to create more than we should allow them to. And ultimately, I feel like what we have here is a team that's gone to the well once too often, and suddenly they found out the well is dry. People have talked about the United FA Cup game being the turning point. I'm not necessarily sure that's true. We go and win our next two league games, I think, after that. It's the league game at Old Trafford where, you know, we really should. We take the lead and we really should put them to bed, and we don't. And that was a demon to be exercised. And this is what this side over the years has been so good at, exercising demons and going and putting things right after they have a really bad experience, and we don't do it then. And I think from that game, it's a draw, two wins and three defeats in six. And one of those wins is a 1-0 penalty victory away to Atalanta. It doesn't really matter. So I feel like this team is burnt out. Their heads are burnt out. And, you know, you can't... We've been walking a tightrope all season, I suppose, is what I'm saying. And sooner or later, you're going to fall off that tightrope if the tightrope becomes too long. City go to Brighton tonight. They're 3-0 up inside half an hour. And I don't think there's at any point of the season we've been anywhere close to looking like doing that. We're putting games out of the fire every other week. Every game is on a knife edge. And you know, at one point or another, that's going to tell. And it has.
Yeah, I feel we have had this conversation just a week ago. yeah, it's I just can't. I feel that I've suffered with them, you know, you know, only mentally, of course. Not the physical part is all on their conto, but yeah, it's we haven't been able to make things easy for ourselves. You know, for a long while. You could say maybe against Fulham, it looked a bit like an easy win. But even that, we made you know, hard on ourselves by you know, gifting a goal because we stopped playing you know, in the last minutes of the first half. But okay, that was a relatively easy win. You could say the second half was I thought really good, but that's probably because Fulham doesn't have anything to play for. You know, they are, as they say, on the beach already. Everton were up for it, of course, because, you know, we were a wounded animal. And the only thing they can do is you know, be rustic, bully us. And we let ourselves be bullied. But, you know, I know it's bad form to criticize referees, and especially when you've lost, but fuck that. I thought, what was his name? What was this? He was so bloody, blatantly.
Madly, isn't it?
I don't know how madly he is, but it was atrocious what he was doing. It was very fucking clear that the Everton were playing for free kicks, for, you know, set pieces, and he gave them everything they wanted, you know, including the one that they score from, which is, you know, atrocious defending by our side, but nevertheless, the free kick that he gives there, and all of the free kicks before that, is in no way is that a free kick, and we let ourselves be rattled because you never get into a rhythm. Again, we don't make things easy on ourselves. And this is something it's probably has, you know, I have praised the fact that we look for the right personalities to recruit. And probably that means that we don't have the players that just, you know, dive and get themselves a free kick or a penalty, because we never get free kicks, even when we are fouled. Whereas, our opponents, you know, have that skill, and it was terrible. And yeah, you know, this is what Everton do. This is the only thing they can do, because, you know, they're a bunch of incompetent pricks, and that's why they're so low on the table, and because they're also incompetent pricks in the boardroom. And we allowed them to do that, and as soon as that their first corner, their first fucking corner. I knew they were going to score it, and it was as if we were doing nothing. The only one who was apparently supposed to defend that was Virgil van Dijk, and he was blocked, and Szoboszlai and Trent were doing nothing and looking at what was happening. And yeah, there was their one of their best headers scoring it, you know, without being defended, without having any opposition against him. So yeah, I think we are mentally burned out. And I don't know if that's because we make things consistently hard for ourselves, or it is because of, you know, other things. But yeah, I'm in one sense, I am relieved that yeah, I can watch games now and only think, yeah, we only need 4 points, and then you know, this season is gone, and at least we are Champions League.
Well, let's hope so. Jay, look, I don't want to. I just can't be arsed talking about the game anymore. It's a disaster. But you know, there's some issues which have started to become extrapolated due to that performance itself, and I don't want to be knee jerk here about particular players, but look, let's just get into some of them because it's what everybody's talking about. I know you've been trying to give the benefit of the doubt, I'm being kind to you here by the way, for like the last couple of years, but you know, I feel like the centre forward, I will admit, I thought he turned the corner just after Christmas, and I thought, here we go, this is it now, this is what everyone's been talking about. But actually, it appears that purple patch is the anomaly rather than the way a top striker goes through dry spells every now and again. This striker goes through hot spells every now and again, and it looks like we've reverted to the mean. And I can probably think of 5 or 6 games where literally gilt-edged missed chances from Nunez have cost points. And I would go as far as to say last night was another one of them.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you ever remember the program Takeshi's Castle? And like the people used to run through the doors, and then he'd open the door and he'd end up in the water. And he'd have to try and get through, like, you know, the maze of opening doors to try and get to the other side to make it through. It just seems like, you know, he gets through one door and you think, aha, he's getting through the maze, and the next thing he opens the door and he falls in the water. And we just keep repeating the scene over and over. Like, we saw it at the weekend in the Fulham game. You know, Jota had a half chance and got his feet a bit muddled up in the first half. But in the second half, when he's put 3-1 goal, he takes that extra step to compose himself, and he's that knowledgeable and ruthless in front of goal. He doesn't really have to even look up because he knows where the goal is, and he knows where the ball's going to go, which is across the keeper. It's what you're taught as a kid. You know, you teach, you know, grassroots football that if you're in a goal and you're not in the middle of the goal, or even if you are, you try and shoot for the corners, but if you're coming down the side of the goal, you go across the keeper. Like, it's just the basics of what you do, obviously.
Totally. The other thing is, and it, with Jota there against Fulham, it's a bit scruffy because the keeper gets a hand on it, it's not right in the corner, but
it's far enough across his body that he can't save it properly.
Yeah, and what he does...
Did Nunez even think? And that's the issue, he doesn't think. Like, you can just see it's like being on goal, and it's like, you know, a red rag to a bull where you just got to go as fast and as powerful as you can. And that's all he does. And Jordan Pickford, we know, can be made to look good when things are straight at him. But he's not a very big goalkeeper, and he's not got very big arms. So if you go across him, he's probably going to struggle to get it. And I think we all felt when we heard the Jota news, that was a bit of a blow. A massive blow in terms of our chances to get in from the game and the rest of the season. But, you know, it's not abnormal for Nunes just to blast it straight at the keeper. And there's been opportunities in recent games and you think, well, maybe that's a little bit of a harder chance. But that's that's as basic as it comes last night. And not only that, like, he didn't even look like he wanted to be up to the fight, which was worrying. And you know, the only player we spoke before we come on was like Luis Diaz, who looked like, you know, that South American desire and passion and pride just to do it, even just for himself, just to put a performance in, just so he can come off the pitch and say, well, I've given everything I could. And we have seen Nunes in games, you know, run channels, hassle defenders, chase down lost causes. And that has been a defence for people who like to defend them, like I have done for loads of the time. And you think, like, well, he can cause chaos, he can harass defenders, he can, you know, potentially cause something within a game. But he was not that last night. Like, and I said this today in work to, like, the Evertonians. I was like, there's two games in our season where, you know, the fans expect 100% from every single player, desire, passion, fight, grit, everything, which is United and Everton, you know, home and away. They're the fixtures that we look for first in the fixture list when it comes out, and you just expect 100% in them games. And if the result doesn't go your way for one reason or another, then so be it. But if the lads have literally died on the pitch during those two games, then you can be, you know, pretty much proud of what they've done, and you can go, you know, with a sense of pride. And last night they let themselves down, they let Klopp down, they let the fans down, because that was abysmal in what they did. And that's the embarrassing thing for us, like, to go to their backyard and not even bother to put up a fight. You know, it's embarrassing. And I hope that, like, some of them actually understand that. I don't know if they will or they won't. But then even, you know, some of our local players like Curtis Jones, like Trent Alexander-Arnold, who should know better, you know, levels of desire and want to defend and get stuck in and actually try and influence the game were barely minimal. So, you know, it was a weak performance from all involved.
Yeah, and look, Beryl, without wanting to go in too heavy, Andy Robertson made comments a couple of weeks ago, I think it was after Palace, that, you know, the forwards have to start doing their job. And when you're playing the midfielder at the back and you see your forwards continuing to miss gilt-edged chances, that you are putting your body on the line to protect your defensive position in a game to allow those gilt-edged chances to be taken and mean something, it becomes exhausting, you must imagine, you know. And it comes a point where I'm sure players, and it creeps into their minds, what am I even doing this for? And, you know, I can forgive Nunez's missed chances if, you know, those two passes into his feet just at the edge of the penalty area where he can take a touch, turn and shoot, or just guide one into somebody's path or protect the ball and wait for somebody to come around him. But he's incapable of doing that. And conversely, if he's sticking those chances away that he's getting, I can forgive him not being able to trap a bag of cement. But by and large, he's completely inconsistent in both those elements of the game, those key elements of being a number nine. Back to goal or through on goal, he struggles in both areas. And I've been a critic for a long time, and I take no joy in calling these issues out, because I would love to be wrong. But it feels like we're at a crossroads now with this player.
Yeah, we were previously talking about our heads going after the cup game against Manchester United, and I think you're right that, you know, it wasn't the team's head going, but I think his head went, because it was his, you know, again, very stupid mistake that gave them the equalizer at the very end of 90 minutes. And I remember after the game, Virgil van Dijk going over to him, consoling him, because, you know, his head went, because he felt we had won the game and he had gifted it to them. you know, maybe it's rewriting history here, but I feel after that moment he has been completely shite, and in every department. And as Jay rightly pointed out, he had his merit because of his endeavor, his good runs, his you know, using his speed and sometimes trickery, and sometimes some good finishes. But yeah, I think we are at his lowest point at this moment. So, you know, all the progress that had been made and the corner that he had turned, he has turned it back to, you know, even more than 180. And we are at a point that he, as you rightly point out, he has no value. And I would even say, yeah, because he has no value, it's detrimental for the team. You know, I wasn't impressed by anyone except maybe Luis Diaz, but you know, I wasn't impressed with Salah. But at the same time, Salah could have had three assists in that game because, you know, he did that, and all of three of them were in the first half. And two of them were on Nunez. If he had taken those chances, and he should take those chances, if you are a striker at any Premier League club, you know, let alone a club that's playing for the title, then you should be able to convert, you know, one of those chances that you get, and two of them were very big chances. And I agree with Jay on his merits before, but I don't agree on the fact that he doesn't think. I think he tries to think, and that's not his forte. Especially the second chance that he got, you know, the first one he needed to be quick, but yeah, he just blams it, and he blams it straightforward right into Pickford. But the second one, he takes a touch too many, and that's why he misses it, and someone can defend it, and that's, I think, because he thinks too much. You know, against Pickford, against any keeper, you need to take that chance just, you know, as soon as you can take it, because the keeper then can't get into the right position to make the best of his save. We've all had our ideas about Nunez. I was in the camp. Let's be patient. He has all the attributes, and he'll come good. But at this point, I think, you know, it's now almost two seasons in, and he hasn't given us what we need from him. Maybe he has the potential, but potential without what he apparently needs to blossom into what he can become is nothing, I would say. So maybe it's time to cut our losses. Maybe it's one season too early to cut our losses, and you should keep him on board to as a second striker to sub on when we are ahead and can play on the counter. I don't know, but this isn't working, I think he has lost his points, lots of points, and I'm not angry with him because I have no right to be angry with him. I think he feels the pain as much as I do. I don't care about that. It's incompetence, and I think we need more as a club, as a team, than we are getting right now. So let's go.
Yes, I'm sure a lot of people are feeling that way, and he's become a very divisive player. It's very unlike us, isn't it, Jay? look, again, Mo Salah has come in for a lot of criticism recently, Jay, and I can understand why. But I feel like we're under appreciating the fact that he's had a really serious injury that's kept him out for months. And this is not something he's ever had the experience before. And I just wonder where you are, given change of manager, his age profile, his form at the end of the season, and his contract status, where you sit with Mo Salah right now?
Cash in. What, while the cash is potentially going to be offered. And I actually think, I don't know, are we at the point now where if we continue playing him this season, we're going to lose money on him, given the performances we're getting, or lack of? You know, you make valid points in the fact that, yes, he's very rarely being injured. And if he ever has, it's always been like a very small thing that's kept him out for a couple of games, but not a couple of months. And we were speaking before we came on about, you know, how he got injured around the time of the AFCON, wasn't it? And he came back against Brentford and looked electric. And we think, well, there we go. That's what we've been missing. And then he went out again for a while, about another 5-6 weeks or something like that. I can't remember how it was. And then he's come back and he's left a shadow of himself. Now, that's partly maybe he's not 100% fit, but also we're tactically not helping him. Like at times last night, you know, I've been not shy in voicing my opinions on him, not a convert to the inverted right back. But we're leaving him on an island on his own, out wide. You know, the midfield is shifting up and across towards the left if Trent's coming inside, whoever the right side of the midfield may be at any one time. But Szoboszlai was going missing and was just wandering yesterday. And he's not the only guilty culprit of that. But it's leaving Mo Salah very isolated on his own. And are often at times too deep to actually influence the game. So we're not getting any joy from him. But then when he's actually got the ball at his feet, you know, Beryl said before, we could have actually, you know, got a couple of assists from him. But there's times when, you know, his touch is off, you know, his passing is quite loose. There was opportunities last night where the ball fell to him in the box and, you know, they were wayward shots. And you just think that that's not the Mo Salah we're used to. You know, at least you'd test the keeper or get it, you know, relatively on target. And apart from a couple of penalty goals, he has looked a bit wayward. And I think the way the club is looking to go in the future with, you know, the return of Michael Edwards, the setup of a technical director and a head coach rather than a manager per se. You know, the way we've operated in the past and the way Edwards is known as his sort of mantra to cash in while the values has at its highest point. A 32-year-old Mo Salah on $350,000 a week with a years ago on his contract is probably flashing red on his laptop as sell. Because you could give him a new contract and maybe get 2 or 3 more years on his deal. At what price are the wages? Because you're not going to come down too much for a player of what he's actually offered to us in his time with us. And then you could be looking at a messy situation in terms of a lot of money that could be potentially resourced elsewhere. So I think that there's a lot of arrows pointing in the direction that it might be time to move on. And it could just be, you know, one of these things where a new manager comes in and it takes away that burden of, well, you've got Mo Salah there and you've got to use him. It could be a case that, well, you know, you've sold Mo Salah, you've got X amount of cash, and it can be resourced into other ways that will make the squad better. You know, you think of the situation when we sold Coutinho, where we sold at a high value, but we reinvested in getting Alisson and Van Dijk for that money. Now, arguably, some would say we probably need, you know, 100 million for Mo Salah potentially, and you invest that in 2 quality players, or 3 or 4, I don't know. It's up to other people to decide that. But are we going to be a value of a team that's better with more assets than one that, you know, potentially looks like it should have to be used at all times and might not be getting actually the best from it?
Yeah, Beryl, another one that's drawn people's eyes is Andy Roberts at the minute. And again, a couple of back-to-back injuries. He hasn't played a lot of football this season. Last night was, you know, particularly bad from him. he's in his 30s now as well. And I just wonder, are we looking at potentially an Andy Robertson on the slide, particularly, and similar to Salah, particularly given the physical attributes that have made him such an effective footballer?
Yeah, short answer is probably yes. I thought he started okay, and the last couple of games I thought he was good. But the first cross that he needed to give, it was, I thought there were three or four of our players were in front of the goal, and he gave a really shit cross. Then again, the cross on Gakpo, I think, which game was it for the third goal? Yeah, too many games. In one of those games, but that was a really good cross. So yeah, I think if you have a player who depends on physicality and who gets into his 30s and then has a bit of a string of injuries, then that sounds like you need to look for someone who can replace him long term, and we know that Tsimikas isn't that player. I don't know if there's a youngster coming through who could play there. There were some when both Robertson and Tsimikas were out, but Gomez played there, and he did well, I should say, but in a different type of role, you could say. It will probably depend also on the new manager and how he wants to play, but I think we need to be on the lookout, and we probably are, for someone who can replace Andy Robertson, who I love. I think we all love. I don't think there is any Liverpool supporter, a real Liverpool supporter, who wouldn't give Andy Robertson all the credit that he deserves. But players have a lifespan, and then we need to move on. And I won't stop loving him. this is getting sappy now, but that doesn't mean you need to drag them along, and that's what's it's threatening to happen. So there are some candidates across Europe, I would say.
If you were looking at youngsters, by the way, sorry, we've got two potential left back options who are both out on loan. So I'd imagine
Owen Beck. Getting,
there's Owen Beck, who's currently at Dundee, and there's Luke Chambers, who's at Wigan.
Okay.
Scanlon's probably more of a left winger in the way he's been developed. But Luke Chambers is doing very well. He's a left centre-back, left-back, can play both positions. But it's whether the new guy, as we'll get into it in a bit, wants to look keenly at the youth. You'll know more than we will on that one.
Yeah, well, look, I think there's two aspects here. I think, and look, I'll throw the first one at you, Jay. A lot has always been thrown at Jurgen Klopp about being too loyal to players, and maybe with some of these guys, a new face coming in, and I know he might not have the element of control that he does, but in terms of does he have any influence, he probably does have an element of it, but there won't be those emotional ties for him to be a bit more ruthless in terms of refreshing certain players in the squad and replacing the age with youth. So this might be a good time to make a change, given that there are the couple of players that we've talked about there, and maybe a few that haven't really landed in terms of what we're used to from Liverpool's recruitment.
Yeah, I think that's a fair argument to make, and I think the you know, that people would look and point at the recruitment we had in the early era of the Klopp regime, and you know, that man again, Michael Edwards, gets brought up in reference to, you know, we had a hell of a lot of hit success in what we were getting. Very few sort of iffy ones or failures. You know, people would point at, you know, Karius as probably being one that failed, but there was a couple of missed game segments. But yes, he probably in the end wasn't ever good enough. And, you know, even the likes of Ragnar Klavan, who come in, who just done a job, but done a suitable job. And the type of players we signed, like, I think we've distanced ourselves from players who maybe were functional to a system, as to maybe now trying to recruit players who are maybe more complete footballers. And, you know, we've not exactly fitted them into what we need. And, you know, maybe FSG have looked at that and said, well, we've spent a lot of cash here and we've not got the same sort of success rate from what we used to have. And maybe we've gone too much in seed and power to Klopp and, you know, his coaching team. And, you know, that there's theories behind how much influence Pep and Linders has. And, you know, have we gone away from a data-driven approach? And now that, you know, Klopp's on the move, it's go back to what brought us this recent success. And, you know, in what looks like a manager in Arne Slot, and, you know, a setup of Hughes and Edwards, that we're going back towards that methodology and maybe a different criteria in what we're going to recruit players for and how we're going to recruit them. But, you know, as you say, it's a clean slate for absolutely everyone. And that's, you know, from Mo Salah right the way down to, you know, Conor Bradley and lads in the academy we may have not seen or heard of. Everyone gets a clean slate and a stab at it. And yeah, there probably is an opportunity for players, as we've mentioned, in Salah and Robertson and others around the team to potentially be moved on, where loyalties may have overruled in other sort of times with Jurgen Klopp. And it's going to be a big change for everyone, you know, and we've seen and enjoyed, you know, the last 8 years on the whole of the Klopp era. And, you know, it's been some of the best football we've seen. It's brought us trophies that, you know, in my lifetime I've never seen us actually proper lift the league until Klopp came. And, you know, it'll be sad, it'll be a change, but it kind of does feel as though the way things are going and the way it's ending this season, it just all starting to feel like it's a natural end. And, you know, it might be, as I said before, that he's run out of ideas, he's mentally and emotionally checked out, and we do need this reset, we do need this new approach. And, you know, we'll go into next season with the same, like, renewed energy and vigour that we always go into the season with. And I think there was a conversation I had today where it was at the beginning of this season, we thought, you know, get back in Champions League football, you know, sort of look competitive again on the whole, maybe pick up a trophy or two, and that's what we've done. But obviously, as the season progressed, it was the hope that kills you of getting much, much more than that. And maybe the reality was that, like, we just ran out of gas and we peaked by, like, you know, the end of February, and that's all we had in us. And yeah, it's just a bit of a hard one to take, but we are where we are. And, you know, maybe it is just a natural end, and it's one of them fresh beginnings that everybody needs on and off the field.
Yeah, Beryl, maybe so. And look, it looks very much from quotes today and comments from the man himself, Arne Slot, your local sides, if you want to put it, manager, you've waxed lyrical about him for a couple of years now. I know Spurs looked at him last year and it didn't come to fruition. But the 2 points you made earlier on, and you were talking about the younger players at left back. From what I hear, and you might be able to give us a bit of a steer on this, and sort of maybe the similarities in the tactical setup on Slot's approach, to both those aspects of football management.
Yeah, it's you know, as someone who also is a fan of Feyenoord, you know, my fandom of Feyenoord is a bit more, has been a bit more low key in recent years. But I started enjoying watching Feyenoord again when Arne Slot took over some 3 years ago. Before that, you know, they had become champions in 2018 under Giovanni van Bronckhorst. You know, you all know him. And I love Giovanni van Bronckhorst to bits as a person. And, you know, he is absolutely a very, you know, a good person and a good enough manager. But, you know, the football wasn't exhilarating. And it was Dirk Kuyt in one of his last seasons dragging Feyenoord over the line then. But and then came the years of Jaap Stam, which was hilarious, but not in a good way. And then Dick Advocaat took over, which was tragic and also not in a good way. And the football was, you know, people were starting to feel pity for us, and then came Arne Slot, and he took over a team and a club that was, you know, the Kuip, the stadium of Feyenoord is from 1937, and it's and it looks like 1837, I would say. It hasn't it has suffered from some managed decline, because they wanted to build some idiotic super stadium somewhere else, and then came the credit crisis, and it never happened, and then, you know, etc. But, you know, forget all of that. Then came Arne Slot, and he took over this club, this team, with, you know, all the same players, and most of them, you know, B garnish, C garnish players, and he let them play football, and it was a joy to behold. And I thought, yeah, so how long is this going to last? And I think the saving grace for that first season, in which Feyenoord became third, which is their natural position, you could say, in the order of things in the Netherlands. But there was this Conference League, and it was the first season of the Conference League, and they made it until the final. But then came Mourinho with his AS Roma team that, you know, scored one goal and then killed the game. It was the same week that Liverpool lost the final against Real Madrid, so, you know, you can imagine my week. But and the season after, it was the season that Feyenoord again became champions. But, you know, not only they became champions, they played the best football in the Netherlands, you know, by a country mile, and they won again in the arena against Ajax, which hadn't happened since 2005. Can you imagine? And they had deserved to win earlier, in previous seasons, and were unlucky. And you won't guess this, but, you know, our referees tend to be slightly in favor of Ajax in some situations, but, you know, forget all that. They won there again, and so, you know, they took the league by storm. And this season, PSV was simply better, but still, it's still a very good season for Arne Slot's Feyenoord, and they've also, had a relatively good Champions League campaign. Were very unlucky in some situations, but, you know, played very well against Atletico Madrid and Lazio and all these teams that can drag the life out of you. How Arne Slot plays I hate to say it, but it's a bit like a Pep Guardiola team. But also, there's a blend of Klopp and this is what Arne Slot says himself. So he likes a bit of a blend of both. So a bit more aggressive on the press, but very much a very methodical, very the build-up is sometimes frustratingly methodical. You almost never see a long ball. There are very little counter counters, so playing very quickly is is more of an exception. But there's the forechecking, there's the press that we know, the gegenpressing, very aggressive pressing, and yeah, it's very joyful to watch, I would say. So but also it's a bit of a 4-3-3, so you could say a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-2-4. But I would say if Arne Slot would play with the same players that we have right now, he could manage it. It wouldn't be a problem in that sense. But people's will, players will leave and new ones will come in. But I think. I'm very happy with if this is what's going to happen, not for Feyenoord, but for Liverpool, yes.
Okay. Look, let's move to back to kind of the now. I think what I want to finish on is. It feels like this feels a bit like 13-14, where it's the end of something and it's never going to be like this again. And this is an unrepeatable feat, blah, 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 blah. But in any other season under Klopp, this would probably be deemed as a success. We've completely redesigned how we play. We've recruited heavily in key areas of the pitch and made those players key players. And we've managed to kind of mitigate that adaptation period that players sometimes require, 3 months, 6 months, whatever it is. And in any other season, if this was 3 years ago, you'd be going into the next, bouncing into the next season going, we're a serious outfit here. Fix a couple of things, tweak a couple of tactical issues, couple in, couple out, and this feels like the start of something, and it should feel like the start of something, the way this team has been kind of reinvented. But obviously, because of the manager situation, it feels very much like the end of something. So I wonder, have we lost a little bit of perspective because of that?
I think maybe we have, and maybe it's harsh hindsight that we're looking at it from saying, we probably didn't expect, no one expected Klopp to go, did they? And it was a bolt out the blue, and it shocked everyone. And you can do wonder if the fact that we sort of invested a lot in reinventing ourselves as a football team in the way we approach games. And I think what we can say is the way we play now is a far cry from the early Klopp years. And again, speculation as to whether that's other influences from the coaching departments, or whether it's Klopp trying to sort of keep up with the Joneses and adapt and change because it wasn't sustainable to play that type of football and ask the players to constantly keep doing that. It's, as I said earlier on, it was a season where we expected to not be where we are, and it was a start of a sort of an adjustment, and sort of a year where we just sort of expected to progress and find ourselves probably next year going for the title, where now we're going in obviously with a new manager and whatever changes we make in personnel and whatever, and next year now looks like a sort of a year of adjustments, and then maybe the year after is one that we go for. Or it could just be we need a fresh pair of eyes, a fresh mind, a fresh voice, and it's just it's just the need of a couple of tweaks, because we have done like an overhaul in the midfield, and you know, at times we have seen that the forward line can all offer and produce goals, and defensively that team, those lads can put together a string of clean sheets, and maybe it just needs a couple of tactical tweaks and maybe a player or two here and there, and we find ourselves, you know, back in the title challenge again next season, which, you know, we'd all love and enjoy. As I say, it's just something that, like, we don't tend to change managers a lot. You know, we had that turbulence era where it was like, you know, the Hodgson, Daglish, Rodgers, but, you know, if I think of through my lifetime of watching Liverpool, you know, the very early 90s, you know, started off with like Roy Evans, and you went to the Hulley era, then the Benitez era, and yes, we then had that little, we had the Rodgers couple of years, then we had that turbulent time, but obviously I mentioned with the Daglish and Hodgson, and then it went to Klopp, so it tends to be a level of stability. We don't tend to make, you know, panic decisions and sort of gung-ho changes. And I think that's what we're probably lining up to go for with the new setup and the new manager coming in. So, you know, it's one of optimism. As I say, we've now got four games left, haven't we? And the hope is, you know, we give a good account of ourselves. We need 4 points to guarantee Champions League football, which I think we'll get. I just want to see us, you know, sort of go out with at least the two home games with good performances and victories in them, because obviously there's the fact we're playing Spurs and earlier in the season, and we felt obviously we were very wronged by decisions made on that day, and it was proven right that, you know, there was significant referee errors, is probably the best way of putting it. That's significantly costed us. So we kind of feel like we need to right that wrong with Spurs, and obviously then the final day of the season is a home to Wolves, and it'll be an emotional one for so many reasons. But, you know, it would be fitting and right only that if we go out with two home wins and, you know, possibly unbeaten in the other two games, then it'll sort of claim a little bit of solace, and we'll feel a little bit better on how the end of the season is going to be, and we can all take the time off in the summer and sort of recuperate and look to go again next year with a fresh outlook, a fresh voice, and, you know, a fresh Dutchman on the sideline.
Yeah, Beryl, like I said, it feels like it could be the start of something, but it also feels like a bit of a natural end right now. And I think maybe the way things have panned out will soften the blow of Klopp leaving and the legacy that he's left. It's sad to see it end this way, but emotionally it might be better for everybody involved.
Yeah, you know, this is the hand that we have been dealt, so, you know, let's better make the best of it. And, you know, there's not a silver lining, but, you know, a tin lining, let's put it that way. It might be that it's easier to take it, to say goodbye, right? You know, if imagine that we had achieved the quadruple, you know, who could follow that act? You know, it would have been a disaster and a disappointment in any case. So, yeah, that's not the case now.
It's a really good point that you make, because the situation we're in now, silver linings and all that, it creates a more optimistic environment for the next manager, because they're not trying to emulate something necessarily. They don't feel like anything other than ultimate success is a failure.
Exactly. And I think the strong points of you know, let's assume Slot will be our next manager. His strong points are exactly what we are at this moment missing, in the sense that, you know, the lack of control in games like yesterday, it drives you mad. And that's what you won't get with a slot team. You know, there will be other things that will frustrate us, of course, because there's always upsides and downsides. And today I saw a tweet by Barney Ronade, a Guardian journalist who I sometimes agree with, but you know, I agreed with him this time. He was saying about, you know, Brighton playing Manchester City and losing. So how do these clubs that, you know, that or these teams that play like you know, Pep Guardiola tribute acts, how do they, but with, you know, with lesser players, how do they think they will be able to play or even have a chance of winning against them? So what we need to think of is yeah, we tried it in a way that was probably the only way that you could try to compete with this behemoth, this, you know, this cheating club, this nation state fueled club. There was only one way to do it, and that was the Klopp way, you know, a different type of football, try to make the best of, you know, what you can achieve with, you know, if you don't have a nation state behind you. I think, you know, without this, I think it's a big achievement that we did manage to win the league once. We should have at least won it three times, you know, looking at the points totals. We'll tell that story later, but that, you know, that's for later. I think the story has run its course now, and we need to do something else. If you drag it too long, just as I said about, you know, players, like, you know, we were talking about Andy Robertson, everything has a life cycle. And I think the life cycle of what we have done in the last 8 years is now done, and we should try to reinvent ourselves. We need to cut ties with some players, with, you know, some things that we did, and that's easier if the person deciding that, you know, at least at the tactical and the personnel side of things, is someone else. And I'm looking. I'm very hopeful for next season. I'm not, you know, I don't dare to hope we will be in a title challenge next season, but we will be successful. We will play for you know, titles, and we will see some glorious football if slot comes. So there's all the reason for being optimistic in a different way. You know, yeah. I didn't want to lose the last two games, and but yeah, we did, and but that doesn't mean that, you know, everything is doom and gloom from now on. So yeah, let's look into the glorious future. I would say.
Yeah, let's do that, lads. Thanks for joining me. Until next time, up the glorious future, Reds.